Oh, I'm trapped in something. Can you call for me again? I need to hear where the exit is here, she said. When I called her name once more, her rabbit ears twitched, and she began walking towards the screen. When she placed her hand on it, the screen rippled like water, allowing her to crawl out. Not my favorite method of travel, but there are definitely worse. Right. There wasn't much that I could do to that other than nod my head in acceptance. I knew fully well how weird the transfer methods of keepers were. The others are on their way for a quick discussion. If you want to stick around to hang out, you can, but things are still pretty busy around here. That's fine, Baloo smiled, shaking her head and hopping over the table to land in front of me, her furry ears flopping. I'm just here for points delivery. I'll come back to play with Behenna another time. After saying that, she held a hand out towards me, to which I nodded and grabbed it. There was a quick prompt, letting me know that she was giving me the point she had promised, to which I obviously accepted. Once she had finished, she smiled, hopping back across the table. See you later, Dave. It's Dale, I muttered, cut off by a sudden black spot appearing beneath her feet, causing her to fall through it before I could finish. I shook my head, waiting for the others to arrive. It certainly didn't take long, Aravi being the first to appear only seconds after Baloo left, Tubrak right on her heels. The others began to file into the room one by one, until the large living room felt as crowded as it had ever been. The only one not attending was Leowen, who said that she wouldn't be able to make it due to helping Lyra make her new house. All right, boss man, Akalia grinned, leaning against the wall. You've got us all here, so why not tell us what new game you want to acquire? Ashley nodded her head, clearly interested as well. In standard time, it hasn't been all that long since World Seed was released, so I'm surprised to see you getting another game already. Yeah, but it's been over a century in mortal time, Aravi pointed out, turning her gaze to me. The game that Sarah told me about is meant to be played either alone or with a small group, as opposed to the ones we have so far. When I said that, the faces of the others in the room became rather peculiar. Huh? Calliope widened her eyes. She made an entire universe for a single-player game? How is that marketable? I guess that you could call it instanced simulations, I said with a shake of my head. I'm still wrapping my head around the idea. This came up when I asked about a game that would help train people against void threats. Apparently, you set up a life simulation with custom parameters, and a void beast is randomly generated to go with you. If you can successfully identify and, if possible, banish the void beast, you clear the game. If you submit the wrong information, you lose. Winning the simulation allows you to continue the simulated scenario without any further void dangers, or you may begin a new scenario. Failing immediately ends the scenario and kicks the player out. Ashley furrowed her brow, clearly thinking it through. So it's simulating entire worlds based on the user's prompts. Aren't you worried that this will push us over the edge to the fifth rank before we're ready? I shook my head, having thought this through as well. From my understanding, there wouldn't be any danger of that. Sarah herself just advanced to the fifth rank not long ago, so she wouldn't have had time to make such a complex game since then that would include so many high-level concepts. This is most likely something she has had for a while, and set up a number of systems to facilitate world creation without advancing. Right, Rian hesitated. But how much does it cost? This was the big question, everyone turning to face me. It's 110,000, I admitted the price honestly. However, Sarah advised me to sell the information about the Void God to the Gilded Branch. Baloo was just here to deliver the payment, which was just over 60,000. Combined with what we already had and the winnings from this last invasion, I believe it's an expense that we can afford, and one that would help us in the long run. Aye, Tubrak nodded his head. This sounds like it'd be a fantasy simulator, once you got rid of the Void Beast. Course, that depends on how customizable the worlds are. Could see it being used as a research base or a workshop. Behenna, meanwhile, paused and looked around. Balu was here. She usually comes by to say hi. I let out a small chuckle at that. She said that she was just here to deliver points, and that she'd be by to play another time. Behenna nodded her head before turning to focus on me again. As for the game, I feel like it would be good for a number of reasons, outside of simply training against the void. For instance, you can do training exercises for military personnel to get them more accustomed to real-world combat. The same can apply to the police or any emergency service. Depending on the rules for the game worlds, there are a lot of far-reaching applications. Even Trival seemed to be in agreement, stroking his chin. Given our recent plight, I believe that we need a proper method of training people to recognize the dangers that the void presents, without causing them to shun any technology related to it. Right. That would lock out most of our recent advancements and isolate each world, Ashley agreed. In that case, is anyone opposed? I asked, looking around the room. Although Leowen wasn't present, it seemed that we had a unanimous ruling.
I would like to ask one thing, Dad,
Scarlet asked, raising a hand. I looked at her with a smile, signaling for her to continue.
What is the name of the game?
That caused me to pause. Asera hadn't actually told me the name of the game. I hadn't thought to ask her about it when we were discussing, focusing more on the content than the title. Give me one moment, I said, holding a finger up as I messaged Sarah to pass along the question. Apparently it is called Codex Chaotic, or C2 for short, I said, Scarlet letting out a long sigh.
So we'll be meeting Assisi soon, won't we?
She asked, earning a round of chuckles from the group. I rolled my eyes with a smirk, soon finding the item on the market. Just as Sarah had said, the asking price was 110,000, and the description seemed to match what she told me. Seeing as nobody was against the purchase, I went ahead and spent the points to acquire the new game. As I did, the television flickered, and glowing green eyes stared at us.
"Hello, my name is Cece," an innocent voice spoke up. On the screen was a silver-skinned girl with black hair, wearing a black and silver dress, and with bright green eyes. "Would you like help establishing Codex Chaotic?"
I turned to look at the screen, about to refuse out of habit, as this was my third game from Sarah. However, given the different nature of this one, I thought it would be best to take her up on the offer. "Of course. Once you're done, you can find Fifi and Vivi to help you get settled in." Cece's eyes widened by a fraction when she learned about the presence of two beings that could be considered her sisters.
"I understand. I will be sure to do so once the installation process is complete."
Chapter 50 "All right, Cece, how exactly does C2 create so many worlds?" I asked, opening my system menu. Ashley had already delivered the software to her incarnation and was in the process of installing the game. This meant that it had appeared within the void, giving me the chance to see what it was like. To my surprise, this world was tiny. If I had to guess, I would assume that it was a size zero world, which essentially meant that planets were the size of one large building. Obviously, this wasn't enough to support a population. But there was no population to speak of. Instead, the space within the world had been replaced by what seemed like endless offices, each one having a standing pod. This pod looked like what one might expect to see used as a full-body virtual reality capsule.
"The process is rather simple, sir," Cece explained with a smile. "Whenever it is time to initiate a new world, a version of myself will take the people who are playing that scenario aside to ask about the parameters of what they want. Afterwards, they enter a capsule within Codex Chaotic. Using a highly advanced artificial intelligence program backed by the systems built into the game, a simulated world is established for them. If there are key characters that the individual will face multiple times in their daily life, such as family, lovers, or co-workers, those individuals will be supplemented by souls offered from your respective afterlife system. Other inhabitants of their world will be artificial intelligence programs with more simple cognition." I gave a small nod when I heard that, before my brows furrowed. What happens to the souls after the simulation is complete? Cece blinked before seeming to understand.
Do not worry, sir. The souls do not immediately pass through whatever cycle you may possess. Rather, souls obtained for Codex Chaotic are equivalent to full-time workers. When they are inserted into a simulation, their memories and personalities are replaced with the role that they are chosen for. When they are not present in the simulation of another user, they are kept in a collective simulation with their original identities. Likewise, when the simulation that borrows them ends, they are returned to this collective. Souls can either be permanently given to the simulation or sent to work in shifts, according to the wishes of yourself and whatever entity may be overseeing your afterlife system.
Will they remember what role they played in a simulation? I asked, to which Cece shook her head.
No, sir. Doing so would compromise their sense of self and could lead to lasting trauma. Instead, the souls are leased to provide a more living aspect to the simulation. But the data that the soul carries is converted into their new identity. Similarly, when they leave, their data is restored to the point they were brought in. This is to ensure a peaceful living environment within the collective simulation, and the potential for souls to rejoin the cycle, should an agreement be reached that would allow them to do so.
I looked over at Irena when I heard that, and she nodded her head.
I can take care of that. Cece, what sort of environment is the collective simulation?
Cece's smile became brighter when she heard that.
Unlike the simulations created for players, the collective simulation does not suffer the threat of void monsters. In fact, there are no monsters present within this simulation. It was created with the purpose of being the ideal utopia, where any of a person's needs can be handled with ease. The only apparent downside is that souls chosen for a simulation are randomized, so it will be common for a soul to go missing for lengths of time while they are being used in a simulation.
I see. Irena smiled slightly.
In that case, I'll set things up so that people have a choice upon entering the afterlife. If they want to enter your simulation, they can do so until such time as their soul reaches the end of its lifespan, or they wish to immediately be reborn.
That is perfectly acceptable. Cece nodded her head quickly. However, that caused me to look over curiously.
If the collective simulation doesn't have a void threat, does that mean that you could potentially create worlds that don't have such a threat from the beginning to use as other forms of simulations?
Cece tilted her head curiously, a finger on her chin.
While it is possible, it is not a standard application of my systems. Doing so would eliminate the possibility of a game over, after all. Unless requested by the Keeper, this option will not be available to players of the world.
That's fine. I just wanted to ask about the possibility. What world systems are available for your simulation worlds? Can people design new systems to incorporate?
When Cece heard my question, she shook her head.
The system database synchronizes with your administration room. This is to prevent the Keeper purchasing the game from needing to spend points making different systems available to the game.
When someone chooses to create a simulation, they are given a series of choices. They can either choose for their simulation to follow one specific world structure, or they can choose to dismiss certain systems. As an example, I see that you are using runic magic for one world and familiar magic for another, as well as systems like Party and Kingdom. When people create a simulation, they can either embrace the full shared laws or remove certain ones, such as a world without magic or a world without kingdoms. They may even go so far as to remove all systems from a world, creating only a fundamentally basic world with the race or races that they choose to inhabit it.
I nodded my head before hesitating again.
Would it be possible for someone to create a world where they themselves are the Keeper?
Cece hesitated before shaking her head.
Yes and no. They can establish themselves as the Keeper in the way that the mortal world would perceive you, a being with incredible powers. However, they cannot create a simulation in which they have an administration room and the ability to access the Keeper systems. This aspect was purposely excluded from the game's design to prevent certain events that might occur because of them.
That was honestly probably a good thing. In that case, I only have one last question. How many people can join a single simulation? And are those people all required to be online at the same time for the simulation to function?
There is no limit to the number of people that can be present in a single simulation, sir, Cece reported energetically, arms crossed behind her back. However, everyone taking part in the simulation must be logged in at the same time for the simulation to progress. This is because the simulated world is paused while inactive, and the souls within it are temporarily returned to the collective.
Thank you, Cece. I think that is everything that we need to discuss immediately. Though, before you go, I don't believe this to be the case, but your game doesn't interact with systems that synchronize your power with the game world, does it?
It does not, sir. She shook her head. Because the player can create a simulation where their power is drastically different from the real world, this was deemed as infeasible. While knowledge obtained in the simulation can be applied to real life, in the exception of cases where critical systems differ, the experience in terms of the world system will not be affected.
Thank you, I nodded, and Cece vanished from the screen, likely going to meet with Fifi and Vivi. Once she was gone, I turned to look at the others. Any final thoughts or concerns? They looked at one another, seeming to think it over. In the end, the one that spoke up was Ashley.
This will mean that certain ideas we had before wouldn't work out, such as using the simulations to train large groups at once. If a single individual wasn't able to attend, nobody in the group would be able to activate the simulation. However, it should still be able to help for what it was designed for, raising awareness and training against void threats. The others nodded their heads in agreement, Tubrock grunting.
Unfortunately, the fact that this game creates simulations instead of proper worlds means that the digital conversion system won't be able to save files from the simulations. Still, it should be able to be used within the simulations, unless someone asked for it to be excluded.
Hearing that, I nodded my head as well. Seeing that nobody else had any other concerns, I returned to the mortal world, where I found myself already positioned on my throne. Tsubaki was standing at the base of the stairs in front of me, and I was more surprised by the fact that she wasn't kneeling than anything else. Though the fact that she had moved me to the throne may have indicated that she had been busy with other things. As soon as I arrived, Tsubaki turned to face me with a smile.
"Welcome back, my keeper. I was beginning to grow concerned."
I nodded, standing up and stretching lightly.
"Sorry. I had to contact some people while I was out.
Also, we are getting a new game to help train people against the void," I announced, Tsubaki's eyes widening slightly.
"I see. When do you plan for it to be released?"
"I'll have Ashley immediately begin the marketing, but the full release should occur within a week. That will give her enough time to upload the game's server files to the database and let people become aware of it." After I said that, I began explaining the different features of Codex Chaotic, such as its single-player nature. Tsubaki listened attentively, waiting until I was finished before speaking up.
"I understand, my keeper. It will be interesting to see what sort of simulations can be created."
Despite her saying that in a completely level tone, I couldn't help but see her eyes all but sparkling. My brow twitched and I let out a faint sigh.
"You're going to be playing this game regularly for your new Trials of Blood, aren't you?"
"I don't know what you're talking about, my keeper."
She shook her head, but her surface thoughts were emphatically agreeing with me. If this was a game where she could choose to customize her own simulated world, including the condition of her character, I could definitely see Tsubaki setting up multiple trials for herself. Though, given that the Void Beast's power level was related to how positive the simulated world was, I couldn't begin to imagine how weak the Void Beast would be attacking a world that is designed to not even be survivable by a normal person.
"I'm curious, though, my keeper," Tsubaki spoke up, snapping me out of my thoughts. "If you combined this new game with Lifra's domains in some way, would you be able to create a replay of the game afterwards, letting you know where you went wrong thanks to the narrative?" I blinked when Tsubaki presented that idea, nodding my head slightly.
"That will likely be a significant investment of divinity for Lifra, but something tells me that she would like the idea, and that it would be able to pay off with how many people would use it for various purposes. We would need to tell Lyphra about that the next time she came to Olympus, which, honestly, was probably going to be as soon as Ashley announced the new game. She wouldn't be able to help herself from wanting to learn more about it, after all. Chapter 51. When Dark Flame Technologies announced the release of a new Keeper-sponsored game, the reception was, admittedly, rather mixed. There had never been a game sponsored by the Keeper that wasn't a massive online game, meant to be played by the entire universe together. Some even braved the void to try to get a sneak peek at the new world, only to find a nonsensical maze of offices. Without being able to properly see the game's content, they were kicked out of the game by the entity managing it. They were forced to wait until the official release 1 week after the game's announcement. As the game servers were going live, there was a small girl sitting at her desk, with black hair and golden eyes. She was curious about the new game, having heard about it frequently in the last week. When she looked outside her window, she saw the seemingly endless sky, distant islands hovering in the air. During the events of V-Day, Mara was one of the first to volunteer to move to Fior, having very few personal connections among the other worlds. In doing so, she was given a rather nice house, a standard service given to deities who accepted the offer. In fact, the house was even better than the one which she had previously owned on Earth. It was only natural that after V-Day had passed, she chose to remain on Fior. Every now and then, Mara would venture out into the other worlds to explore, but she was never an outgoing girl. She had managed to escape from her life of battle and had no desire to return to such again. Still, there was a difference between a true battle of life and death and simply playing a game. That was Mara's belief, and the reason why she often enjoyed playing the online games released both by the Keeper as well as other companies. However, she had a requirement for each such game, and that was that she was able to create a new character without her standard abilities. Only in doing so would she feel the sense of disconnect that would allow her to enjoy the game properly. The visor on her desk let out a soft ding, notifying her that the new game had been fully installed. With a small smile, she lifted it up, placing it on her head. Unlike most, Mara chose not to have a virtual avatar of herself, feeling like she had enough of an identity crisis already without any of that. Thus, whenever she played these games, she would always do so herself. "Log me in to Codex Chaotic, please," she said in a soft voice, the helmet recognizing the voice command. Her vision went pitch black, and she soon found herself sitting in a small office. There was a blue carpet on the floor, white walls, and a standing metal capsule positioned just behind her. In front of Mara, sitting across the desk from her, was the entity that she had heard about online, the one that would remove anyone that tried to invade this space. She had silver skin, glowing green eyes, and long black hair. Mara wasn't surprised by how young she looked, knowing fully well that her appearance did not mean anything in regards to her actual age. "Welcome to Codex Chaotic. My name is Cece, and I'll be helping you set up your new life." Cece introduced herself with a warm smile. "It's launch day, so I assume you are not familiar with the procedure here, correct?" she asked, to which Mara nodded her head. "The first thing you'll want to do is decide what sort of world you want to live in. At the basic level, you can choose to live in any of the known worlds within the Keeper's domain. If you are an advanced user, you can choose to mix and match systems from different worlds, or remove systems to create a fully customized experience." Mara nodded her head before pausing and asking a question. "Excuse me, but if I chose Fior, how would that work? Void beasts can't attack Fior, after all." Cece blinked before smiling wide. "That is an excellent question. However, there are methods to allow a void beast into Fior. This can happen in three basic methods. First, the Void Beast identifies the proper coordinates for an individual layer of Fjord and teleports there just as you would teleport through the Void. Secondly, the Void Beast passes through the Fairy Ring or other standard method of inter-world travel. Finally, there is the option of the Void Beast possessing someone that is traveling and then spreading its influence. In truth, the black stone walls of Fjord are not a perfect defense against Void Beasts. Rather, they only prevent void influences from directly seeping between floors. Mara gave a small nod at that, satisfied with the answer. She had only been roughly considering Fjord, but in truth was leaning more towards Deccan. Card magic had always been something that she found interesting, and she wanted to try living as a kitsune for a while. In that case, can I have my simulation be in Deccan?
Certainly.
Cece accepted the request readily. Is there anything that you would like to change about the world, to prepare for the life you want to live? Mara pursed her lips, nodding.
I'd like to be the only realm, please, and only have the card magic.
Once again, Cece accepted the request without issue. From my records, Kitsune are the only race originally native to Deccan. If you choose to keep this modification, that will be the case, unless you want to have more races present.
No, that's fine. I'd like to be a Kitsune, too.
Mara smiled slightly, dipping her head a bit.
Also, I don't want to be a god, please, just a normal Kitsune.
Cece appeared to be processing the information, soon following up with additional questions.
Would you like to make any other specifications? For example, any family, friends, an occupation?
Mara's eyes widened slightly when she heard her options.
Could I have a family? A mother, father, and older sister? For my age, I don't want to be in school, so 19 and working at the family business selling magic cards.
Cece's gaze seemed to turn warmer as she listened to Mara's requests.
Certainly. Is there anything else that you would like to change?
My name,
Mara said quickly, realizing that they were almost done. In order to help remove herself from her game personas, there was an online name that she always liked to use.
Maya. I'd like my name to be Maya Connors.
Very good, Cece nodded, standing up and walking around the desk. If there is nothing else, I believe that we are ready to begin. Just step into this capsule, and you will immediately be sent into your simulated world.
Really? There's nothing else that I need to do, or wait time?
Mara asked in confusion, Cece shaking her head.
There are no forms you need to fill out, no special systems you need to interact with. Codex Chaotic is designed to be set up based on as vague or specific parameters as the player wishes, she answered, sincerely, Mara standing up and walking over.
There was a pneumatic hiss from the capsule as it opened. Mara bit her lip gently, walking into the capsule and closing her eyes. The inside was padded, clearly meant for her to relax back against. As she did so, she felt the capsule tilt back, letting her lay down. The next thing she knew, her eyes snapped open, staring up at a wooden ceiling. She could feel a warm blanket resting on top of her, and something rubbing along her from behind. Turning back, she lifted the blanket to see a black, bushy tail swishing from side to side. It felt entirely natural, causing a smile to emerge on her face. Next, she brought her hand up, lightly stroking a finger along one of her large fox ears. Doing so sent a shiver down her spine, causing her to shudder. Looking off to the side, she saw the clock saying that it was almost 7 in the morning, and her eyes widened. Out of sheer reflex, she jumped out of bed, running over to her dresser to look for a change of clothes, before she even realized what she was doing. It was only after she had changed that she noticed her actions, pausing and focusing. When she did, it was as if a movie was being played, memories from her life as Maya Connors. As Mara, she knew that she could turn off those memories if she wanted, and they were specifically kept separate from her memories of the real world, as if there was a force preventing the two from meeting. When she realized this, she let out a deep sigh of relief, allowing the memories to play for a moment. Afterwards, she began to walk out of her room and down the stairs of her family's home. In the kitchen, she saw a taller, mature woman wearing an apron over a long-sleeved shirt and tight jeans.
"There you are, Maya. You've got the day shift at the store today, remember? I'm just about done with breakfast. So sit down, and you can get going once you've eaten."
Maya's eyes widened as she heard the gentle voice. The moment she saw the woman, a new set of memories played, allowing her to recall that this was her mother, Clarette.
"Okay, Mom," she said,
in a somewhat emotional tone, making her way to the dining table.
"Is everything all right, Maya?" Clarette asked,
looking at her daughter in concern.
"Are you still drowsy?"
"Yeah, that's probably it."
Maya nodded her head quickly, lightly slapping her cheek to help her wake up. Whether in this keeper's world or the last, Mara didn't have any memories of her family. That was why she had asked for one for this simulation. Now, seeing a mother who acted so naturally towards her, she had to fight back to stop her eyes from turning wet. Clarette smiled, nodding her head. It didn't take long to finish the breakfast, 2 steaming strips of bacon and scrambled eggs with toast. Maya's stomach practically roared as the dish was presented to her, wasting no time in devouring it. Clearly, her tastes were the same in this game as they were on the outside. Clarette lightly chuckled, returning to the kitchen to cook for herself next.
"Michelle should be hungry when you get there, so I went ahead and made something for you to give her. It's on the counter, on the way out."
When Maya heard that, she quickly nodded her head. As soon as she was done with her breakfast, she hopped up from the table, her tail swishing happily behind her. After getting her shoes, as well as her personal magic deck, she made her way to the door. Following her mother's words, Maya saw the card resting on the counter, showing a thick slice of roasted ham with a side of mashed potatoes covered in brown gravy and steamed carrots. Maya recognized it as their dinner from the night before, when her sister was already gone to work. She grabbed the card and pocketed it, making her way out of the house. Maya always ran to work, feeling that it was too close to bother taking the transport nodes. 5 minutes later, she pushed open the door of the Connors Cards storefront, a bell ringing overhead.
"Hello, thank you for visiting Connors. Oh, hey, Maya,"
a familiar voice called out. A slightly taller kitsune woman with black hair greeting her from behind the counter. Maya's smile grew wider and wider as she made her way in.
"Hey, Michelle, Mom asked me to bring you something to eat when you get off."
She reached into her pocket, retrieving the card containing Michelle's dinner and handing it over. Michelle's eyes widened as she saw the card, her stomach immediately betraying her.
"Oh, thanks. I was planning to grab something on the way home, but this is so much better. Do you mind taking over for me a little early?"
Maya giggled lightly, nodding her head.
"Sure thing," she said, already walking around the counter. "You're the best," Michelle declared, as she pulled Maya into a hug, before running towards the break room in the back. Maya was left alone in the store, her tail swinging faster and faster.
She knew that there was some void incident in this world that she would need to solve, but for the moment, she was simply enjoying herself and her simple family life. Chapter 52. Maya walked around Ashtanu after having gotten off work when her father came to the store. There was a bright smile on her face, enjoying the new simple life of living with a genuine family. However, in the back of her mind, Maya knew that there was something else that she had to be doing.
"Cece might not have put the void beast in right away. With the settings I asked for, it's hard to say what level of monster I'd be dealing with. Although I didn't give myself any extravagant powers, I did put myself partially in charge of a magic shop, which gives me access to a large variety of spells." Even though Maya was enjoying this family, she couldn't forget why she was in this simulation. Not because she wanted to clear it and leave, but rather just the opposite. As long as the unknown void threat was out there, there was the chance that it would manifest by attacking one of her family members. Because of this, she had to get ahead of it, look for anything odd in the city that could potentially impact her life, and identify the rules behind the void beast. One wrong guess would mean that her new family would disappear,
So she also had to be extremely careful.
Cece, are you listening? She called out in her mind, not sure if the digital entity would monitor all of the players, to wait for them to submit their deductions.
That's right. Cece's response came less than a second later, surprising Maya. Do you already have findings to submit?
No. I just wanted to ask a question. If a player discovers the appearance of a void beast and contacts a temple to ask for a fallen god to deal with it, does that count as clearing the simulation?
This was something that Maya had considered doing as soon as she found the threat, but she needed to confirm the validity of her idea.
If the void beast is destroyed, you will have one chance to make your submission regarding its rules. If you answer correctly, the simulation is cleared. However, answering incorrectly will result in a game over.
Maya bit her lower lip at that, realizing that her idea was equivalent to cheating on the test. The whole point of the simulation was to discover what void monster was lurking in the world and how it operated. It made sense that getting outside help to defeat it wouldn't work. She thanked Cece for the answer in her mind, turning her attention back to the city around her. Maya strained her ears, listening for any conversation that might hint at a void monster. Someone was talking about how their car suddenly broke down, or how their terminal was on the fritz. Either of those could potentially be the answer, but she wasn't sure how that would impact her own life. With a sullen sigh, she ended her day by making her way back home, concluding that it was likely that the void monster had not become active yet. There was no point in searching for something that wasn't there, after all. As she turned the corner to head home, however, she saw a man creating a holographic sign along a blank piece of wall. This was a rather common act nowadays, whether for advertising or even graffiti. Because the sign wasn't permanent, it was easy for the police to remove it. However, this sign didn't seem big enough for either of those situations, so Maya walked over curiously. When the man walked away, she saw that it was a missing persons sign, and her body stiffened. The person missing was a young kitsune with brown hair and blue eyes. Maya immediately turned to the departing figure, rushing to catch up with him.
"Sir! Sir!"
The man turned around, listless eyes watching Maya.
"Yes?"
he asked, his voice as somber as his expression.
"Can you tell me about her?" Maya asked, pointing at the picture. A trace of light entered the man's eyes.
"Have you seen my cinder?" he asked, though Maya quickly shook her head.
"No, but I want to help look.
The police don't know the area as well as the people that live in it, right?" she asked with the best smile that she could manage. Missing people were admittedly oftentimes the result of a normal incident. However, when you know that there is a void beast in the area, there is a high chance that anyone going missing is related.
"Besides, I work at a magic shop, so maybe I can help make a spell to find her if I know more about her."
The light in the man's eyes dimmed slightly, but he nodded his head.
"Thank you for caring. Cinder is my daughter. She went out with some friends a couple of days ago and hasn't come back. When I asked her friends, they said that she never showed up. Please, if you do find anything, let me know."
Maya's eyes widened, now certain that this was related to her void beast problem. A normal monster would have left obvious traces in the city, or at least a body. A kidnapper would have called for a ransom. As for traffickers, well, there was always the slim chance, though she would much rather believe that a void beast was involved.
"I'll do that, mister. Where was she supposed to meet them?"
The man hesitated to answer, before apparently deciding that there was nothing to lose.
"They were going to the theater, and then planned to head out to get something to eat."
Maya nodded her head, thanking the man again, before turning and running off. However, she only ran far enough to turn the corner, glancing back and watching the man leave. In order to retrace Cinder's steps, she had to know exactly where she left from. Thankfully, the man didn't seem to notice her, still going around and posting the missing person signs. He did this for nearly an hour before making his way back to an apartment building 3 blocks down from where Maya herself lived. Now that she had a lead, Maya sent a message to her mother to let her know that she'd be late getting home. Afterwards, she used her terminal to find the nearest theaters to Cinder's house. There were 3 in the area, so it was hard to say exactly which one she went to. After all, people often didn't plan their outings according to efficiency. Thus, Maya would need to trace each path. Once she had her destinations, Maya searched back through the weather and traffic history to 2 days ago. If there was an accident on the road, she may have taken a different path, or she may have gone in between buildings if it was raining. While she didn't have any reports of an accident, the weather report did indicate that it was raining for a large portion of the day. Maya chewed gently on her lip as she pulled up a map, drawing out the most likely paths that Cinder would have taken. She started to walk along the first path, making sure to keep an eye out for any alleys or awnings that would have offered a dry path through the rain, as well as any suspicious buildings. Maya was certain that Cinder would have gone straight to her destination, since there would be no need to take a detour for food when they already planned to eat after the movie. Thus, she followed the path, retracing her steps to take any side paths she saw along the way, and then repeated this for the other 2 theaters. Maya didn't see any trace of Cinder, or any indication that she had simply been abducted. With a sigh, she made her way home once again, having spent 3 hours on this fruitless endeavor. When her mother asked where she had been, she simply answered that she had been taking a walk around the town. That wasn't really a lie, as she had been doing a lot of walking around town. While her mother let the matter drop there, her sister teased her that she had been secretly meeting up with a boy, causing Maya's cheeks to flush red. She wasn't used to being teased, and so she stammered out a reply before rushing to her room. The next day, when Maya left to head to work, she saw that there was another missing persons poster sign up. Now she was certain that it was related to the Void Beast, and that she was running out of time. Still, she had to avoid drawing attention from her family, so she went to work after memorizing the number on the sign. While she was at work, in between customers, she called the number to ask for information as she had done with Cinder. Thankfully, the wife of the person missing was more than willing to help anyone who wanted to look for her husband. Once she was done with the call, Maya thanked her for the information and hung up. Now she had 2 paths and could narrow down the range of the Void Monster. However, what Maya found alarmed her. The paths of both Cinder and the missing husband did overlap in an alley, one that she had previously investigated. More to the point, both incidents happened around noon. So, the Void Monster has a limited activity window as well as range of motion. The worst part was that this alley could also be used as a shortcut when Maya traveled to and from the shop.
Michelle!
Maya's eyes widened when she realized that her sister was the first likely target if Maya didn't act quickly. Michelle should be home long before noon, but Maya didn't know how early the Void Beast's activity window lasted, only that it was gone by the time she got off work, and didn't appear when she was on her way in the morning. As soon as she realized this, her face paled, and she hurried to call her sister. When it didn't connect by the 3rd ring, Maya was about ready to panic, only for Michelle's voice to suddenly speak up.
"Hey, sis. All good? Didn't forget your lunch or anything, right?"
No, Maya said, letting out a long sigh of relief. She was glad to hear that Michelle was okay.
"Hey, would you mind switching shifts with me starting tonight?" Maya asked, knowing that this was the easiest way to keep Michelle safe, while also giving herself time to investigate.
"Huh? You want the graveyard shift? Everything all right?" Michelle's voice had a touch of worry to it.
"Yeah, it's fine. I just thought it'd be a nice change, is all."
Maya tried to sound as confident as she could, but Michelle's voice turned more playful.
That's so. You know, you can't have boys over with the late shift, right? No matter how empty the store gets, Michelle teased, causing Maya's face to go bright red. It's not like that. Really, it's not. She hesitated for a moment, swallowing thickly before deciding to be honest. Shell, I think that there's a void monster nearby.
What?
Michelle's voice immediately lost her playful tone, turning deadly serious. Maya, what are you talking about?
The last few days, two people have gone missing. I did some research, and both of them were last seen on a path that has them use that alley you sometimes cut through on your way home from work, around noon. The posters are practically right outside our house. I'd just like to swap shifts with you, just for some peace of mind, okay? There was a long moment of silence from her sister before Michelle let out a sigh.
Okay, I got it. It might be a coincidence, but we can switch if it makes you feel better. Though, I am going to tell the church about this, okay?
Maya gulped, knowing that it would be suspicious if she asked Michelle not to. There was no reason why Maya wouldn't want the church to know about a void monster abducting people.
Got it, she nodded, knowing that she was on a timer now. It would take at most 2 days for a fallen god to be dispatched after they verified the evidence. Maya only had until then to make sure that she knew all of the rules that she needed to complete the scenario.
Chapter 53.
Because of her arrangement with her sister, Maya worked another shift that night, taking over for the time when Michelle would have normally worked. As she had expected, there was another missing persons poster up on the wall near their house after she had returned home earlier in the day. At this point, Maya was certain that the beast that she had to track down was made more obvious due to the simplicity of her request. She wasn't about to look a gift horse in the mouth, though. After Michelle took over for her the next day, Maya cast a simple energizing spell on herself so that she didn't have to go home to sleep. Afterwards, she walked towards the alley that she had been keeping her eyes on. This would be her only real chance to solve the riddle of this simulation. To avoid being labeled as suspicious, she used an invisibility card to hide her figure, staying at the entrance of the alley and waiting. She kept staring into it, watching for any kind of change. There was the chance that the alley had a way of luring other people in, so she had to keep reminding herself not to enter the alley for any reason, even if it seemed important. 1 hour passed, and then two. Once the time hit 11 in the morning, Maya's eyes were already drooping. If she were watching paint dry, at least she'd be watching something happening. However, just as she was thinking that, she heard something that sounded like a whisper in the air. Maya looked around sharply, her eyes widening, when she saw the pigment on the wall shifting. A painting of a brown-haired kitsune girl appeared, fully animated as she walked deeper into the alley along the wall. Maya felt the urge to follow her, digging her nails into her palm to resist. Someone that had been walking down the sidewalk, however, was not so aware of the danger.
Huh? A middle-aged man spoke up when he saw the movement, turning to enter the alley to investigate.
Maya wanted to shout out to stop him, but she needed to see what was going to happen. As the man entered the alley, other kitsune figures began to appear on the wall. Maya could recognize some of them from the posters outside her house, and assumed that the other faces had been similarly abducted. She brought her hand up, covering her mouth to stifle a gasp. At this point, the man was bewildered, trying to talk to the paintings. However, they just watched him, smiling. The moment he turned, saying that he was going to go get some help, his body vanished, reappearing depicted on the artwork along the wall. Maya's eyes trembled, and she gulped, squeezing her eyes shut to focus. When she opened them, she involuntarily took a step back. All of the figures in the artwork were now on her end of the wall, seeming to be staring at her.
Cece, I want to submit my findings, Maya called out, knowing that she only had this one chance.
If she tried to leave, she would vanish, just like the man just now.
Go on, Cece asked in a gentle tone, and Maya took a deep breath to organize her thoughts. The Void Beast has a limited activity window of 2 hours. While it is active, it manifests images of people it has trapped along the wall it infects. After saying this much, Maya had to make a decision. Did the Void Beast kill its targets, or merely trap them in its artwork? The fact that they were actively luring people in hinted that they did not retain their original minds, at the very least. Biting her lip, Maya decided to risk it. The images it manifests lure new prey into the infected zone. If the prey makes any attempt to leave, it is instantly consumed and added to the collection. It is incredibly likely that the prey is killed immediately, fueling the growth of the Void Beast. At the end of its activity period, all of the manifested images disappear. There was a long pause from Cece, and Maya was worried that she had gotten a critical detail wrong. How exact was she supposed to be when determining the rules of the Void Beast? In most cases, it would be incredibly difficult to determine a beast's rules without falling victim to it personally. Even then, you may only get a small fraction of the rules governing the beast. Thankfully, Cece's voice spoke up a few moments later. You are correct, she said, the images staring at her from the wall melting away. Would you like to end the simulation now, or continue? Maya let out a sigh of relief, shaking her head. Continue, please. There was something that she had to do now that this was over. And thank you. I'm happy to be of service, Cece said, as Maya turned to walk home. When she arrived, her mother was pacing back and forth in worry, her father sitting down on the chair with his brows knit together. At the sound of the door opening, Clarette jumped, turning and running to pick up Maya. You're home, she said in relief. Michelle told us that you found a Void Beast. When you didn't return home, we were worried sick. Her father, Martin, nodded his head, letting out his own breath of relief. Don't worry us like that again, Maya. I don't want to have to go out there and put up your poster, too. Maya felt her eyes watering and quickly shook her head while buried in her mother's arms. You won't. I think the temple took care of it. I saw it, but it disappeared, so I think it's gone now. In fact, she was certain that it was gone, but couldn't say that just yet. Still, that was very reckless of you, Maya, Clarette scolded, finally setting Maya down on the floor. Promise you won't do something like that again? I promise. Maya nodded her head, biting her lower lip. But is it okay if we close the store for today? Just for today? There's something that I want to talk about, but I need everyone here first. Martin arched his brow for a moment, Clarette looking confused. After a moment, her father nodded and called Michelle, telling her to close up early and make sure not to take any shortcuts coming home. As a 24/7 shop, it was rare for their business to ever close, aside from special holidays. But Martin seemed to realize how important whatever Maya wanted to talk about was. While waiting for Michelle to arrive, both of Maya's parents tried to ask her what kind of thing she wanted to talk about. However, Maya firmly shook her head, refusing to say anything about it until everyone was present. Once Michelle got home, she looked around, seeing everyone in the living room. "Hey, what's going on?" she asked, their parents looking at Maya once again. Maya hesitated, reaching into her card pouch and pulling one out that she had prepared overnight at work. "Dad, can you confirm the effects of this card for everyone?" she asked, passing it to him. Martin blinked, taking the card and examining it. This is a zone of truth. If anyone in this zone speaks a known falsehood, the light filling the zone will turn red, and they will be subjected to pain matching the severity of their lie. Maya nodded her head as the others looked confused. Please use that on me. I need to tell you all something, but I need you to know without any doubt that I'm telling you the truth.
Oh, honey, you know we'll believe you if you just tell us, Clarette said. But Maya shook her head firmly. This was something too unbelievable without proof. However, the only proof she could show was something like this.
Please, Maya emphasized again.
Martin hesitated before nodding his head. He flicked the card at Maya, activating it in midair. A bright green light descended from the ceiling around her. Maya took a deep breath, centering herself. She had decided to be honest with them. She wanted a family life. But that life could not be built on a fundamental lie.
This world is a game, she said,
while the light remained green. Her family watched her uncertainly.
What do you mean? Clarette asked,
Maya turning to focus on her.
The entire world. It's a simulation. In my world. It's a game known as Codex Chaotic, a new game that is just released. My name isn't Maya. It's Mara. The point of the game is to create a new life with people created by the game. Somewhere in that new life, there will be the threat of a void monster. In order to beat the game, you have to find the void monster and identify the rules that it abides by. If you do, the monster is defeated.
So, when you said that the beast disappeared, Martin began, Maya nodding her head.
Yes, I watched to identify its rules. I don't know if the setting of the game has it so that the temple killed it or not, but it is definitely gone now. That's why I know it won't come back.
Michelle blinked, looking at the green light.
Does that mean the simulation is over? That you're going away?
Maya shook her head quickly, almost shouting out.
No, I don't want to go. I asked for this simulation, to have a family, because I don't have any memories of a family in my world. I come from another world, even outside of this game. In my original world, I had some problems with my memory, so I can't remember who I was or what sort of family I had. That's why I wanted to know what having a family really felt like. After clearing the simulation, a player has two options. They can either end the simulation or keep it going without further threat from the void. I don't want to lose the family that I just found. But,
Maya lowered her head,
I couldn't live a lie. I didn't want to continue this simulation without you knowing anything, so I made that card. If you don't want me to keep it going, if you don't want me to stay, I'll understand. But I wanted you to know the truth.
Clarette looked like she was about to throw herself at Maya, but Martin put a hand on her shoulder to stop her. Can you tell us about your life on the outside? He asked, Maya gulping and nodding her head.
I'm a goddess. Originally, I was in an invasion force sent by another keeper to attack the world. However, the keeper I was supposed to kill called out to me and showed me more kindness than any of my allies ever had. He welcomed me and offered me a chance to live in his world. I accepted and helped him fight. Right now, I live in a dungeon world known as Fior, where a lot of different races live. I don't really have many friends, and I live alone in a big house. I spend most of my time either playing games or just wandering through the streets of different worlds. Whenever I am in a game, I always change my name to Maya. That's where the name came from for this game. It makes me feel safe, so I don't lose more of my identity.
Martin nodded his head, doing a far better job of keeping himself calm than either Michelle or Clarette. Are you not worried that you'll lose your identity if you stay here with us?
Maya quickly shook her head. I thought I might, but after entering the simulation, I realized that wasn't going to happen. It does a good job of separating my offline identity and memories from what I experience here. Does that mean you want me to go?
Seeing Maya lowering her head, Martin let out a sigh, finally releasing his wife. Clarette lunged forward, sweeping Maya up in her arms again.
No matter what else may be the case, you are still my daughter. I would never ask you to go. game or not, you can stay for as long as you want.
Really? Maya asked, her eyes watering once again. It's fine if I stay?
Clarette nodded her head fiercely, Michelle choking back a sob as she nodded as well.
Martin simply smiled.
You can stay, naturally. But make sure that you log out often enough to take care of your health in the real world. If you wither away out there, goddess or not, you'd still disappear on this end, right?
Chapter 54
Cece, can you give me a status report on C2? I asked, sitting in the lounge area of Olympus. It had been a week now since the game had been released. Aside from Balu briefly visiting to spend some time with Behenna, there hadn't been anything noteworthy, so I decided to check to see how everyone was adapting to the new game.
Of course, sir.
Cece's voice spoke out from the speakers in Olympus. At this point, roughly 60% of the population in the primary planets have experienced their first simulation. Of these, more than 80% have fallen victim to their simulations, while a further 5% are still in the process of clearing them. I nodded my head slightly, my brow twitching. So only 15% of the people who entered the game have cleared a scenario?
That's correct. This is due to many people asking for extravagant conditions in their simulation. Only 0.5% of those that have cleared their scenarios did so with such conditions in place.
Right. Does Codex Chaotic have any form of ranking system? When I asked this, there was a brief pause. People were always stimulated by a sense of competition, even in a single-player game.
There is a configurable ranking option, yes. How would you like me to assign the rankings?
I thought about that for a moment before shrugging my shoulders. Assign the players points based on the difficulty of the Void Beast that they faced, as well as the time to complete the simulation. If they lose, subtract that many points from their total score. That should convince more people to slowly adapt instead of biting off more than they can chew.
Understood, sir. Should I subtract points for those that are remaining in the simulation after completing it?
No, I shook my head firmly. If they remain in the simulation, they don't care about rankings in the first place. Just let that simulation be their reward. However, make sure to set up reminders if they play for too long at a time and start to damage their health.
I will keep that in mind, Cece responded briefly.
Do you have any other instructions?
Not right now, I said, standing up.
I was somewhat tempted to play the game myself, but I felt that the dangers were too high. I didn't know if dying in a game world would be enough to destroy everything, but that was not really a risk that I would take. At most, I could send my virtual self in, since I had gotten a new one after Despar's servers were fried. However, my virtual self was busy training in fragments of Ascidia. As I walked out of the lounge and towards the elevator, I closed my eyes, focusing on my connection to Priscilla. She had been rather active since I granted her the title of priestess. I checked in on her now and then in secret, and she didn't brag about her new position, but rather simply sought to inform people that she would help them with any of their troubles that she could. In doing so, she had created hundreds of divine abilities to use in the many divine tomes that I had given her partial access to. These abilities ranged from altering the weather to curing illness, bestowing blessings, and even offensive techniques to defeat powerful monsters. Although she did channel a small amount of divinity from me whenever she used one of these techniques, she was simultaneously promoting faith in me to those around her. So I'd say that it was a net positive. As far as her pestering me with constant prayers, thankfully that wasn't an issue. At most, she would pray to one of the other gods or goddesses and have them relay a message to me. She did this once via Auravi, asking me if it was okay for her to use the powers I had bestowed her so openly. This seemed to be her answer to the information that I wouldn't always be able to answer responses. While thinking about that, I blinked, calling out again. Cece, how is Tsubaki doing? I asked, entering the elevator and heading towards my own palace within Olympus. When I arrived, Cece's voice followed behind me,
She is still in her initial simulation. Would you like me to show you?
You can display what's going on in an active simulation? I asked, in surprise.
Of course, sir. There is the chance that someone will wish to livestream their experience, so such a function is necessary. Additionally, I can provide multiple camera angles adjusted in real time to provide the best viewing experience.
I paused for a moment before nodding my head. I turned down the hall, heading for my office. In that case, please display Tsubaki's simulation. Tsubaki couldn't be happier with her simulation. Because the world paused any time she logged out, she was able to still do things such as cook and clean around Olympus regularly before logging back in. However, this trial of blood was considerably different from those that she had gotten used to. Having felt that she became too accustomed to fighting in the wilderness with her previous trials, she set the current one to a more urban setting. Her simulation was akin to a sort of apocalypse. There was a massive monster attack, and one of the monsters infected a portion of the surviving population, taking control of them and blending in among the survivors. Because of this, Tsubaki had to be constantly wary of not only the monsters, but of the people as well. Next, she removed all forms of magic or class levels from the simulation, meaning that she was only able to fight with basic levels of strength. This forced her to rely on salvaging and her own intuition to fight the giant monsters that still inhabited the city. As for figuring out the void beast plaguing the world, Tsubaki wasn't worried about that, nor had she noticed anything strange. In fact, she was doubting whether there was such a void beast at all. Perhaps the conditions that she set for herself were so harsh that the simulation determined that a void beast was unnecessary. Tsubaki held a rifle in one hand as she lurked on the top floor of a dilapidated building. She wore a skin-tight wingsuit and goggles, but notably, she did not wear a parachute. Parachutes were too large of a target when deployed, so Tsubaki set up an alternate landing method in various target buildings. She knew that she only had two or three shots before her target got close enough that she would have to evacuate. So she was using armor-piercing rounds with the most powerful rifle she had managed to salvage. It was loud and bound to draw the attention of both survivors and monsters, but she considered it worth the risk. After all, her target this time was one of the biggest beasts in the city. When Tsubaki felt the vibrations run through the building, she knew her target was close. Turning her body, she aimed the rifle out the window, peering through the scope. There was a massive centipede, its body more than 200 meters long, and with the face of a humanoid on its head. It let out screams of pain as it moved, mimicking the sounds of its victims. Tsubaki had studied this monster for days, having set it as her first real target for her trial. She steadied her breathing, watching the monster through the scope while lining up her shot. Its movements were too fast for any reliable accuracy while it was moving, so she waited until it came to rest, its body wrapped partially around another building. She held her breath, adjusting her aim to one of the monster's large eyes. After the first shot, it should rush towards her, making the second shot somewhat easier to land than when it was moving normally. Once her shot was lined up, she pulled the trigger, feeling the recoil of the gun pushing her back slightly. There was a loud bang, the bullet tearing through the air and piercing through the eye of the humanoid face. The centipede monster let out a shrill screech, its head rearing back and eyes tightly shut. Tsubaki knew she had successfully pierced the eye, seeing a trail of green blood leaking down from it, and immediately loaded her second shot. The centipede opened its remaining good eye, looking around in a frenzy. When it determined which direction the shot had come from, it began running in that direction, causing tremors throughout the area. Tsubaki steadied her breath again and fired her second shot. However, the centipede monster closed its remaining eye the moment it heard the gunshot, causing the bullet to do only superficial damage. Tsubaki clicked her tongue, strapping the rifle to her back as she ran towards the back of the building.
As part of her precautions, she had opened every window on the top floor of the building that she was firing from, making it easy for her to run and jump out of that window. When she did, she spread her arms and legs out, the webbing of the wingsuit deploying and letting her glide down the adjacent street. Though she couldn't afford to look behind her, she could still hear when the monster crashed into the building that she had just left, pressing a button on a small device in her left hand. Explosions rocked through the air, pushing her further along as she detonated the explosives that she placed throughout the building. Tsubaki focused, controlling her path as much as she could. Her destination was in sight. She just had to make sure that she hit it at the right angle. She was flying towards a large net, loosely spread out over a hole in the wall of a building's third floor. When she was just about to hit the net, she pulled up on her wingsuit, increasing her angle while also slightly decreasing her velocity. Immediately after, she pulled her limbs in to brace for the impact. When she hit the net, it immediately broke off of the wall it was pinned to, unable to withstand the sudden force applied to it. Although it slowed her down, it had only marginally done so,